wrestling fans, are you ready?
Yes, 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 yes.
For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, let's get ready to rumble!
And now, please welcome at this time your hosts, Graham GSM Matthews and RJ Marceau. You're listening to the next era of wrestling radio. This is Wrestle Rant Radio.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Wrestle Rant Radio for Thursday, April 12th, 2024. I'm Graham GSM Matthews. Hope you guys are doing well and having a great week so far. Coming off of WrestleMania 40, which, speaking of which, I'm still exhausted from just being there in Philadelphia. A great two-night event, and all the events surrounding WrestleMania were awesome. Still kind of exhausted from all the travel and the work surrounding it. It's going to take me a while to kind of catch up from the show, so bear with me in the weeks ahead as far as, you know, reviews go and shows and podcasts. That's actually why we did the show today, Wrestle Rant Radio, and not on Thursdays, which is usually when we put it up. So it's a day late this week because I had a lot to kind of catch up on from the week. I'm still in the process of catching up, like I said, so bear with me through this process. But it was a great time in Philly for Mania Weekend. A lot to get into with Mr. Marceau, breaking down the two-night event with arguably the greatest WrestleMania main event of all time. We'll talk about it a little bit later on with Mr. Marceau. But before then, though, do want to air my interview with the new WWE Hall of Famer, Paul Heyman. Now, this was from 2-3 weeks ago. The interview went up 2 weeks ago. We recorded it 3 weeks ago. I was going to include this in the episode last week, but didn't have a chance before I put up the show with our WrestleMania predictions. So it's going to be included on the show today, talking all about the A&E doc on Roman Reigns, where he interestingly said in that doc, if I lose the championship at WrestleMania, I'll have to walk away from WWE, which obviously he's not. But we'll see the fallout from that, I suppose, when Roman Reigns returns at some point to WWE. Now that he's no longer champion, we're in a new era of WWE now, now that Roman Reigns is no longer the WWE champion. But yeah, I thought the documentary was really, really good. He talks all about it in our interview, and he talks about Roman Reigns, his role, and the whole Bloodline story, and so much more. His Hall of Fame speech, and again, this was recorded before he cut the speech, before he was inducted last weekend, and I was there for that speech. It was outstanding. We just have a lot to talk about. I really enjoyed this interview with Paul Heyman, so hope you enjoy. We'll put in the interview with Becky Lynch most likely next week here on the show, and some other interviews I've recorded as of late in the upcoming episodes of Wrestle Rant Radio. You can check out new episodes every single week on WrestleRant.com, WrestleRantRadio.com, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and now YouTube. Google Podcast is no more. So Google Podcast has been replaced by YouTube Music, which takes the podcast that I upload to YouTube and puts them in a stream of its own. So they're not uploaded automatically. I have to put the video up on YouTube of the podcast. Sometimes that's like the next day. Sometimes it's a couple days later. The most recent podcast they put up almost a week later, but that's just because I was gone. But yeah, now you can find the YouTube shows, the full shows on YouTube. I upload them like a day or two later, so just keep that in mind. If you check out the show through Google Podcast, that is no longer available. They have folded Google Podcast. Just check it out on YouTube in that case. Full audio episodes available over there, like the next day after I upload them on every other platform. So check them out there first, and then on YouTube if you miss them there. So without further ado, enjoy my exclusive interview with the all-new WWE Hall of Famer, Paul Heyman. Graham Matthews here with Bleach Report ahead of the upcoming episode of Biography WWE Legends on Roman Reigns, the reigning undisputed WWE Universal Champion. We're talking to the wise man here today, upcoming WWE Hall of Fame inductee, and the director, executive director, and producer of this documentary, Mr. Paul Heyman. Paul, thanks for taking the time, man.
Pleasure is all mine, sir.
Great to speak with you again. Just talk a little bit about this documentary, being the executive producer and the director for it as well. Obviously not a role that you're unfamiliar with, given your time in the industry and everything you've done in recent years and orchestrating the rise of the Bloodline and everything else like that. Talk about the role that you played in this documentary and how it came out.
Well, Roman Reigns is not a man that wants to be one of many. Roman Reigns is a man that wants to pursue greatness at all costs. And when Roman Reigns was approached about doing the A&E biography of Roman Reigns, he didn't just want to do another biography. Roman Reigns wanted to do the best biography in the history of television, not just even in, of WWE biographies, but of all biographies. Roman wanted to do a biography that was worthy of Emmy consideration. And if not, then if it doesn't get Emmy consideration, then worthy of the Emmys being accused of corruption for not nominating us. So in order to pursue that level of presentation, he knew he needed someone to tell his tale from a passionate perspective, and someone that knew him intimately enough that he would be presented in a light that he felt was authentic, warts and all. So the approach to this biography was unlike any other in that we weren't just there to peel back the curtain and let you know Joe Anoa'i, the man behind Roman Reigns, but also the untold stories of his life, that when the biography was over, a viewer would sit back and say, I not only understand the tribal chief Roman Reigns far better now, oh my God, I never knew that about the man behind the persona of Roman Reigns. And I find him to be as fascinating and interesting as the presentation of Roman Reigns on WWE television.
And all the time that you spent with Roman, obviously the documentary itself is going to cover everything you just said and kind of like the life behind the scenes of the Universal Champion and everything else. In the time that you've spent with him personally in the last couple of years, what would you say, and again, this might be covered in the doc, would surprise people the most about Roman Reigns, the person?
That what you see on WWE television is exactly what you get. That SmackDown is the greatest reality show in the history of television. Because on the Friday nights that feature Roman Reigns, you get to see an authentic portrayal of the, T-H-E-E, the top star in the entire industry. That he presents to you the responsibility and the obligation and the accountability of being the top star. And he has no problems articulating the burden of being the top star, not just in WWE, but in the entire industry as well. And that's something that no one else has ever accurately portrayed, certainly on the cinematic level that Roman Reigns has portrayed it before in the history of sports entertainment.
I mean, the name of the show is Legends, WWE Biography Legends. And in this season alone, we've gotten Sergeant Slaughter, Scott Hall, Diamond Dallas Page, among other people across all the other seasons. Roman Reigns is one of the few people covered so far that is an obviously a legend in his own right, but one of the only people to be an active performer of the roster right now. According to you, Paul, in your opinion, when do you think Roman kind of surpassed that legend territory that kind of makes him worthy of being covered for a show like this at this specific point in his career?
Midway through the last decade, I think Roman Reigns was worthy of being called the legend when he had already main evented three or four consecutive WrestleManias. And this was while he was still the big dog Roman Reigns, and we had not entered the era of the tribal chief, the head of the table, the undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion Roman Reigns, which was August 2020. I think he was already a legend when we got paired together on television, and everything that was accomplished before August 2020 would, by our design, pale by comparison to what gets accomplished after August 2020, which is something that was discussed in depth in this documentary, which was his constant, consistent pursuit of greatness.
As we head into WrestleMania, he's almost 4 years into his run right now as the Universal Champion, having broken so many records and whatnot since winning the championship, like you said, back in August of 2020, you guys pairing together 2 days before he won that championship. Talk about the cliche question he always gets asked. I'm sure you've already been asked today, Paul, a number of times. What inning are we in now with the bloodline?
Well, cliches are everybody. I'm telling you this. Everyone in the room here is laughing. I gave a baseball analogy at one point, and people have been challenging that analogy ever since, mostly because I think everyone now understands that baseball is fake. And so analogies to baseball don't hold in our world. I'm going to be hesitant in naming what inning that we're actually in, except to suggest that with the advent of Solo's rise up the ladder and the inclusion now of The Rock in the bloodline, acknowledging Roman Reigns as his tribal chief, that no matter what inning we're in, we're playing a ball game that is going to most likely go into extra innings at some point.
Well said. Well said. I mean, you talk about the rise of The Rock in the bloodline, Solo Sikoa, his rise in the bloodline, Roman Reigns himself in the bloodline storyline and the saga that's kind of taken on a life of its own in the past 4 years. Just talking about the storytelling aspect of what we've been getting on television. You talked about it ad nauseum in the last couple of years and what we're seeing, the role that you have in it, and the strength of the storyline and the storytelling and whatnot. We just saw it literally last night as we speak right now on Raw with what closed the show with Rock and Cody. We saw it with Cody and Roman last week. Do you think that what we've seen from the bloodline in the last couple of years, but specifically in the last, I don't know, I'd say 6 months to a year since the rise of Triple H and Creative Power, has kind of taken on like an extra emphasis on the storyline or storytelling aspect, excuse me, of the bloodline and how the role that Roman Reigns has played and kind of the emphasis on the extra storytelling going forward in the last couple of months and so?
I think under the creative guidance of Paul Levesque, the audience is more cognizant of our pursuit to define storyline first at all times. But it has been that way for us since August 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Just the very way that we revealed the fact that Roman Reigns was no longer the big dog, and Brock Lesnar's advocate was about to become a special counsel slash wise man, and the big dog was about to become a tribal chief. Just the way we let that play out on television was the infancy of the bloodline storyline. So it's always been storyline first for us. And I think it took until the Paul Levesque era for the audience to realize just how much we incorporate the mantra of storyline first at all times.
In the teaser that WWE put out yesterday for this documentary airing this weekend on Easter, no less, and the anniversary of the first WrestleMania, Paul, I got to give you credit for that. You mentioned that before we went live here. But in the teaser for the documentary, you mentioned that, or it's mentioned that Hulk Hogan, The Undertaker, John Cena, Shawn Michaels all acknowledge Roman Reigns. And that's a big part of it. But does Roman Reigns acknowledge Paul Heyman? You're going into the Hall of Fame, Paul. First of all, congrats on that. But does Roman Reigns acknowledge the greatness that is beside him in the wise man that is Paul Heyman?
Well, I don't know a higher compliment I can be paid than to be called the wise man. And that nickname comes to me from Roman Reigns. I wouldn't dare have given myself the moniker of the wise. Advocate, I took from the fact that my father, who was a personal injury attorney, would be in court. He'd piss off the judge. Wow, a Heyman pissing off an authority figure. Who would ever thunk it? My father would push a judge to the limit. The judge would admonish my father. My father would say, oh, Your Honor, I'm just an advocate. And I took that from my father. Special counsel, Roman Reigns came up with because I wanted to bestow upon him the name the tribal chief.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the tribal chief would have a counsel. And therefore, as the leader of my counsel, you would be my special counsel. But I would never have called myself the wise man because that name has deep roots in WWE folklore. The term manager which was used heavily before my time. There were three managers in the Northeast, in the old WWWF, led by Vincent James McMahon, Vince Sr. Captain Lou Albano, Freddie Blassie, Ernie Roth, who was known as the Grand Wizard. And they had a monopoly on the antagonist side, the villain side, the heel side, in WWWF for a generation. They were known collectively as the Three Wise Men of the East. And to call myself the wise man when growing up under the Three Wise Men of the East, to me, would be sacrilege. I couldn't give myself that name. It'd be like anointing yourself king or emperor. Someone has to do it for you. And one day, out of the blue, Roman Reigns just said, "You are my wise man." And it moved me to tears. Because it's perhaps the greatest honor ever bestowed upon me in or out of this industry, with the exception of my children calling me dad. I try to live up to that on a daily basis, in the same way that every performance that I am blessed with the opportunity to present, to me, is just an audition to appear the next time. Every day of my life, I try to live up to that moniker of being Roman Reigns' wise man, because you could only be judged by your worst day and your worst performance. And my worst performance still has to be better than anybody else's best. So does the tribal chief acknowledge Paul Heyman? He acknowledged me by naming me the wise man, which now everybody calls me. Now it's not like, "Paul, how you doing?" Now it's, "Wise man, how are you?" everybody is compelled and constrained to pay respect to me in meeting me by calling me a wise man. And that's all because of Roman Reigns.
Is there anywhere you draw the line as far as who calls you wise man, whether it just be talent or like fans coming up to you calling you wise man? Is there anywhere where you draw the line there?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, I get pissed if someone doesn't call me wise man.
Well, I wish I got the memo, because I would have started this by calling you wise man.
Okay. By calling me wise man, ultimately, you're acknowledging your tribal chief, Roman Reigns.
Okay. Well put. Well, speaking of Roman, you talk about, I love the inspiration there with the wise man of wrestling, and you talk about the history there. I know you mentioned recently in another interview, I forgot where it was, talking about the Island of Relevancy and where that kind of came from. Amazing genesis there, and that's a whole other story in and of itself. But you talk about Roman. Is there anyone from WWE or wrestling's past in general? Roman is a one and only. We know that. But is there anyone from wrestling's history that Roman reminds you of, that you see shades of in Roman Reigns?
Well, that's why in the biography, we wanted to interview Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, John Cena, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker. We wanted to explain the life of the absolute number one undisputed top star in the industry. What does it take from you? What does it demand of you? What sacrifices do you need to make? We've all heard the stories. No birthday parties, no anniversaries. You miss your kids' ball games. You miss graduations. You miss funerals and weddings. But what else does it take out of you? What is the demand? What is the burden of being the absolute undisputed number one top star in the, not just in WWE, but as in this entire industry? Hulk Hogan can speak to that. Ric Flair can speak to that. John Cena can speak to that. Steve Austin can speak to that. Triple H can speak to that. Shawn Michaels can speak to that. The Undertaker can speak to that. And we're not doing the biography of Roman Reigns after his run, where he can reflect back, "Well, you know, during my time as champion, during my time as the biggest box office attraction in the history of sports entertainment, during the time I had lifted the industry from the pandemic to unfathomable heights." We're in the middle of this run. We're in the middle of this tenure at the very top. So what is that like for him now as he's living the life, as he's driving the dream, as he's elevating the industry? And what happens to him afterwards as told by those who also lived the life, drove the dream, aspired to heights no one else had ever accomplished before? So to me, that's a fascinating look at their perspective of the position and Roman in the position at this very moment. So I don't know if that means he reminds me of them, but he certainly makes me think of them because they all lived the life. They all were number one without question, without a number two, three, four, and five. And that's who he is right now, which is another reason why we were so particular about how we wanted this biography to be presented. Because it's unlike any other biography that's ever been on A&E. This is not, looking, well, we're sitting here with Gene Hackman, who's 90 years old. Let's talk about your career. We're sitting here with Clint Eastwood, who's almost 100. Let's talk about your entire career. We're right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the Blaze period. This is Leo DiCaprio now. This is the hottest, you know, this is Cillian Murphy now. This is Tom Hardy now. This is not even Tom Brady right after all the Super Bowls. This is now in the crux of it. So, this is Brock Purdy. So, this is Steph Curry with years to go, with more championships to win. So that's why, to me, it's so fascinating, because this is not how biographies are usually done. This is, the old boxer sitting, the biographies are done. The old boxer sits in front of the black and white stutter stepping, I knocked that guy. Oh, man, that guy hit me so hard. You know, it rattled my brain. It's not it. This is someone saying, I have more to look forward to than I have tales to tell already. So it's why we were so particular about this biography, is that it's such a unique narrative and had to be told from that perspective.
Going off all that, Paul, as we wind down here, last question for you. I think you summed it up perfectly as far as your Hall of Fame induction coming up as well, as far as Roman still being in his peak, literally as we speak right now, doing a biography on him. The Hall of Fame works the same way. A lot of people go in after their career is over. Rey Mysterio, we know, went in last year while he was still active. Flair went in when he was still active 15 years ago. But that's really where the line is drawn, though. You're in elite territory here. Is that why you agreed to go in this year, while you're still very much in the heat of things? I know we're in Philly, obviously. That's a factor. But I was surprised that you accepted while you're still very much active and at your peak on WWE TV.
I was surprised I accepted, too. I have been offered the WWE Hall of Fame a few times already. And I've turned it down because I never wanted to do it while still active, because if my perspective is I'm going to accept this Lifetime Achievement Award and continue on for a little while, that's not much of a goal for the future. The goal for the future right now is to make everyone regret asking me to accept this honor this year, because the true value of my Hall of Fame career came after 2024. That the heights that I can reach after this induction make what happened before this induction pale by comparison. I accepted the award this year, number one, because it's in Philadelphia. And it's a unique opportunity that we are a few blocks away from the corner of Swanson and Rittner, where the ECW arena sat. And to do it is me acknowledging Philly, because you'd think I'd want to take this in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Do this in Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, where I'm originally from. I'm doing this in Philly. It's an homage to Philly. Number one, Philly, because it allowed me to do ECW. Number two, I'm doing this because my kids have been nagging me about it for years. When are you going to accept the Hall of Fame? When are you going to accept the Hall of Fame? And I think number one is because they really do want to see their father be honored. And number two, I don't think either one of them want to give a speech after my death. They don't want to take it posthumously. And they're like, let the old man just take the freaking award already.
Yeah.
And number three, and perhaps this is the most profound reason. This is the first year that Triple H, Paul Levesque, has chosen the entire class of the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my life's great honors has been witnessing the work that Paul Levesque has done as the chief creative officer in WWE. The shoes that he has to fill, the accomplishments that he has to live up to, the disruption of the entire industry that he has to follow is a task that no man or woman would ever look at with a reasonable perspective. And he has not only lived up to it, but we are in the midst of the hottest run in the history, not just of WWE, but in all of sports entertainment. We are smashing records every quarter and every year, and now every night. Merchandise records, television license fees, attendance figures in gross and in net. The performers are making more on an average than ever before in the history of the industry, even with inflation taken into account. And that's because of the magnificent job that Paul Levesque has done. To be the first person named to the Hall of Fame by Paul Levesque, to be the first headliner of a class that he has chosen, is one of the greatest honors of both my career and my life. And it would be a terrible disservice to Paul Levesque. It would be a grotesque demonstration of disrespect to Paul Levesque if I were to have turned that down. Out of respect and admiration for the job that he's done and for the man himself, I'm honored to be inducted this year. Plus it's in Philly. Plus it's WrestleMania 40. And plus, for once, it gives me something that shuts my damn kids up.
Well, that's a must-see speech. I'm looking forward to being there. I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm looking forward to watching this documentary, too. Like I mentioned, Paul, coming up this Sunday on Easter. It's an Easter special, basically. A biography, WWE Legends on A&E, airing on A&E this Sunday, March 31st. So I look forward to it. Paul, this has been great. Always a fascinating chat. The last time we spoke, yeah, recommended Angel with Dirty Wings. I still have yet to watch
it. Angels with Dirty Faces.
Oh, why did I say? I always say wings. It's Angel with Dirty Faces, but Angels, it's still on my watch list.
And you haven't watched it, so you haven't completed your assignment.
That was a year and a
half
ago.
Shame on you, young man.
What'd you say?
Shame on you.
I know. I failed you. I failed you, Wiseman. But by the next time we speak, I promise I will have watched it.
Please acknowledge your tribal chief, Roman Reigns.
I will. Thanks a lot, Paul. I appreciate the time. Congrats again.
Thank you very much, sir.
Big thanks to Paul Heyman for the time. Always a treat talking to him. Check out the full interview right now in video form over on my channel, youtube.com/WrestleRant, and in article form over on Bleacher Report from 2 weeks ago. Now we throw it to my conversation with Mr. Marceau, breaking down a very newsworthy WrestleMania 40 weekend. Mr. Marceau, brother, how you doing? I know you weren't feeling well during WrestleMania last week. How are you recovering?
Feeling better. So I made it through both nights, feeling better now. So over the sickness and the WrestleMania as a whole was a solid 2 nights.
Listen, I think we're on a pretty good streak right now. Again, we'll talk about it a little bit later on. I do want to have your get your thoughts on whether it was the biggest WrestleMania of all time and the best WrestleMania of all time. Like we throw around these hyperboles a lot. A lot of people do, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. But do you think watching it back or having watched it last weekend, like we're in the middle of a pretty good streak right now? I would say from 37, 38, 39, and 40. Now, our thoughts on these various WrestleManias, I think, has varied, actually, in the last couple of years. But I feel like we're on a pretty good run right now of good to great WrestleMania, some being better than others. I thought 39 was one of the best they've ever done.
I thought 37 was good, the first one back in front of fans post-COVID. 38 I really enjoyed. I know you weren't as high on it, but I really enjoyed 38. And I thought this year was a pretty good WrestleMania as well. It's been probably close to 20 years, dude, since we had a pretty solid stretch of Manias that were not bad. Like, I'm thinking, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Like, that whole stretch of Manias were really, really good. Range from good to great. I don't know if we've gotten quite that far, because 36 had no fans and 35 was, you know, okay. It was pretty good. But so far since 37, I would say we're on a pretty good run of good to great WrestleManias. Would you agree with that? And would you put it up there with what I just said, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I thought this year was, I thought it was two solid nights. It's the greatest WrestleMania of all time. I don't know if I'd go that far, but I thought it was a solid two nights. Like I said, continue like a stretch of good shows, some good matches, and obviously successful business-wise. So I thought it was a solid two nights.
Well, let's get into it here. We open up night one with Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch fighting for the Women's World Championship. A great matchup. I had Becky Lynch winning. I believe you said Becky Lynch winning as well, right?
Dude, we took a bath on these picks.
Some of these were really, like, some of these we were not right on at all. I mean,
this is probably the most wrong we've ever been, like, total. Like,
no,
we were,
I think so.
On a ton.
And I'm glad we were, because some of these I was hoping I am right, and we, you know. I'm right. I hope that I'm wrong. I've never been more glad to have been wrong on some of these picks. But no, I think we both picked Becky Lynch on this one last week. And it was Rhea Ripley who ended up retaining, still the Women's World Champion, winning in clean fashion, no less, as well. If you're not going to be the main event, you might as well open the show. That's exactly what they did, starting the show hot. Worked very well together. And Rhea Ripley, 1 year into her run as Women's World Champion, still the Women's World Champion. So, really, really enjoyed this. Give me your thoughts on the match and the surprising outcome.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match. Like I said, if you're not going to main event, you usually start off the show. So, that was a good start of the show. I don't know if the crowd just wasn't really into it, or it's just the way the finish happened. It kind of came off clunky on TV. Like, the way that she hit the Riptide, like, against the turnbuckle. And, like, there was no reaction. And then she just hit Riptide again, 1, 2, 3. So, I mean, that kind of caught me off guard. I think that was before we get into the whole night, I guess, in general. I feel like night one, I don't know how much different the weather was, but I felt like the crowd was a lot more dead on Saturday night than they were Sunday. So I feel like it kind of ruined some of the finishes because the crowd just didn't really react. Maybe it was just by shock that Rhea had won, but I thought it was a solid match and it was a good way to start the show.
No, it was certainly a crowd issue, too. I totally agree. I forgot to mention that before we got really into night one, but night two was much hotter, and I think night one had a, you know, it was a good show overall, certainly not great. Somewhere in the middle there, the crowd died even more, because some of these matches, you know, they were good, but they weren't like, oh, this is amazing, or anything like that. I thought the crowd might have been louder for this. I mean, we were in the box, so I couldn't, the window was closed, too, because it was so fucking cold, so I didn't really exactly hear the crowd for the better part of the show. Night two is a different story. But yeah, maybe the weather had something to do with that. I don't want to completely defend the crowd's quiet reaction, but it is worth noting, absolutely. And I thought it was a really good match. Rhea Ripley still the champion. Are you happy with the result? I mean, they kicked off, or rather resumed the rivalry on Monday night between Rhea and Liv Morgan. So it looks like they are indeed headed in that direction, probably for backlash. I've always said that Liv should be the person to take the belt from Rhea. I don't think that's going to happen. But what do you think now that Rhea has beaten Becky? Does this lead to someone else like Liv Morgan or someone else that we're not even thinking of taking the championship off of Rhea instead? Or do you think they just build back up to a Becky Lynch rematch and she beats Rhea for the belt at like SummerSlam or something like that?
Yeah, it really depends on what they do with the draft, which is supposed to happen in, I think at the end of this month. So
yeah.
We'll see. I thought we'd get Liv to maybe be the one to beat her, but I don't know. I feel like she beat Becky so decisively it'd be kind of bizarre if Liv beat her like a couple weeks later, whatever backlash is. So I think it's gonna be someone else. Like I said, it could be Becky. They have a rematch, or it could be someone they're not even thinking of.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the draft will have a lot to do with that. Probably could be someone from SmackDown. Could you see a scenario where they wait another year? Now again, we don't need to have these years long title runs, but just worth mentioning that a year ago after WrestleMania, they planted the seeds for Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair. Now, we never ended up getting that match. I mean, it's been teased a couple times in the last few years, but specifically after WrestleMania last year, nothing came of it. They went in a different direction. We never got the match. We will get it at some point. They were on separate shows.
And now that we did not get the match, do you think they save that match if Bianca goes back to Raw or Rhea goes to SmackDown? Because they're not bound to Raw anymore or SmackDown with these championships. You can switch shows because they're not brand designated anymore, which is nice. Could you see a scenario where Rhea Ripley holds onto the championship for another year and potentially faces and drops it to Bianca Belair at WrestleMania a year from now? Or do you think that's too far away?
I mean, I can see it happening. I don't want it to wait another year. I mean, it could be done. That could be done at SummerSlam. I mean, I don't think it has to be waited to WrestleMania. Similar to, like, what you had mentioned, I'm not a huge fan of, like, these, like, long-ass title reigns. I feel like for certain people it makes sense, but, like, not everyone needs a year-long title reign. Like, Rollins almost just did. Gunther was, like, almost 2 years. Roman, Rhea's now over a year, like... I don't know. I don't think we need everyone to have a year-long title reign. So I think if they're going to do her and Bianca, I'd rather that SummerSlam than Mania next year.
Yeah, no, that would be a great SummerSlam main event as well, or a top match on that show for sure. It all really makes, depends on what show they end up on together, if they're both on Raw or both on SmackDown, or if they have to wait until WrestleMania next year because Bianca's going to remain on SmackDown and Rhea remains on Raw. And they're going to have to build the match at Mania by having one of them win the Royal Rumble or something like that. Again, because they've already both won the Royal Rumble match. But we'll see. But I have no issue with Rhea retaining. Becky winning would have been fine because she hasn't held the main roster singles championship in quite a few years, since WrestleMania 38, actually. But that being said, Rhea, you know, she needed this win to really kind of cement herself as a defending champion because she hasn't had a whole lot of title defenses. And, I mean, she's had a couple good matches as of late, like the Nia Jax match surprised me, and the Ivy Nile match was pretty good back at day one. But she hasn't really been a fighting champion for the most part, and I think she needed this match, and I thought it was a really good match. We had the Home Depot Invitational, as you called it, for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship. Now, they had made it pretty clear going into the show, and we talked about it last week, that there's a chance they could split the belts because they said the match will continue until both sets of the championships are retrieved. So, and then they also weren't together either, which is funny because any other time we've had a undisputed championship match with multiple belts, usually the belts are all together on the ladder. But here they were on two separate rungs. So it pretty much spelled out that, hey, we're going to have new Raw Tag Team Champions and new SmackDown Tag Team Champions, which is exactly what happened. A-Town Down Under are the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and the Awesome Truth of the new Raw Tag Team Champions, beating DIY, New Day, New Catch Republic, and Judgment Day as well. The reigning champions, the Judgment Day, Finn Balor and Damian Priest. So, good match here. Nothing too spectacular. We've seen far better ladder matches in WrestleMania past, but it was fun for what it was. They got all the teams on the show. They worked well together. I don't know if the crowd again was into it, because it sounded like they were quiet for the most of the show, for majority of the show. But I thought the right teams won, though. I think this is one that we did call. I think we said Awesome Truth would be the new Raw Tag Team Champions. And I'm pretty sure we said A-Town Down Under would be the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions, which is exactly what happened. So again, your thoughts, and as you called it, the Home Depot Invitational, and we have new two sets of Tag Team Champions on Raw and SmackDown.
I think the best part of the match is that we picked it correctly. Like you said, I think, I don't know, it's just not that it was like a clunky match, but I didn't love that when Waller and Theory had won. They're just like, oh, new SmackDown champions, and then they like attempted to go for Raw, and then they both are just wiped out. And I know Waller was done for the rest. I think we maybe saw Theory at the end of the match, but like Waller got thrown through a ladder and he was done for. Like, we didn't even see him again, and then by the end, like, I'm pretty sure that was like, wait, who won the SmackDown Tag Team Battles again? I'm like, oh, Waller and Theory, because they didn't show it again. So, yeah. Didn't love that, but like I said, I think the right teams won and got everyone on the show, and Home Depot missed out on a high sponsorship.
Theory and Waller have worked well as a team. They tease tension as of late, but I think the title run kind of gets them some direction on SmackDown. Miz and Truth, I mean, them getting their moment was really cool, the whole point of this match. I mean, it really could have just been Miz and Truth versus Judgment Day, but they probably didn't want to pin Balor and Priest. They didn't want to pin Priest right before the big moment of Night 2. They wanted to get more teams on the show and, more importantly, split the tag team titles, which is exactly what happened. They did a great job of that. And, are you in favor of the tag team titles being split now that we have a lot of teams on both brands?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's necessary at this point. I will say they should also, like, rebrand them so it's not SmackDown and Raw, because what's going to happen if the teams move, they're going to do the stupid pass of the title. So I think they just need to rebrand them, but I don't mind that they split them up.
I think that's coming. I thought we would have seen that in the post-WrestleMania Raw, but that didn't happen with the Women's Championships last year until after Backlash, so it might not be happening imminently, but I do think it will happen at some point. If they did it with the Women's Championships, they will definitely do it with the Men's Tag Titles as well, probably on the sooner side, I would have to take a guess. Rey Mysterio and Andrade taking on and beating the duo Santos Escobar and Dirty Dominic Mysterio. Pretty much just a TV match. I was really hoping we would get Rey and Santos one-on-one on the show. We got it on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago instead. Babyfaces reign supreme here. A good match. Again, nothing overly spectacular, but it was fun for what it was. I think the other story about the match was that Rey was supposed to team with Dragon Lee, and then right after, right before WrestleMania, Andrade filled in for Dragon Lee after Dragon Lee was attacked. So we don't know who attacked Dragon Lee. Carlito was passed over the first time and a second time, so it's pretty clearly him. Maybe the turn is coming on SmackDown on Friday. I guess we'll have to wait and find out. But again, I thought this was good. Really nothing more to write home about it than that. Although, aside from the fact that we did get an appearance from Lane Johnson, don't ask me how I remember that name, and Jason Kelsey on the show as well, which got a nice reaction. It was pretty just fucking random. I mean, could they not have had them interfere and maybe not interfere, because it made the baby faces look dumb, too, that they needed interference from these two masked luchadors to win the match. That was pretty stupid. But I guess they got them on the show, and they're Eagles players, or were Eagles players, whatever, so there was that. But your thoughts on this whole thing?
Glorified Raw SmackDown match. Love Rey, love Andrade, love Santos and Dominic, but there's no need for them to have this match on this show. It just, crowd didn't care. I didn't care. Like you said, the whole Jason Kelsey, Lane Johnson thing, like, they needed their help to beat these two, I guess. Like I said, I feel like it was more like pop the crowd, but it was a fine match. I think the right team won, but it was kind of throwaway, honestly.
Yeah, got them all in the card. Got a nice cameo reaction or cameo appearance from those two guys, but that was really about it. I could see the feud continuing, like I said, just to get Rey and Santos and one more one-on-one match. Maybe Santos wins there. I mean, it got them on the card better than nothing, but it didn't really serve much of a purpose beyond that. Felt like a filler match, if nothing else. We got to talk about this, though. I think the absolute worst match on both shows. I don't know if that's even a debate. Jimmy and Jey Uso having their match. We got to talk about this, because you talk about glorified Raw SmackDown match. That's what this was. Not every match needs to go 15 minutes. This only went 11. But this was not good at all. Not only was it not good, it was disappointing. The right guy won, so it wasn't a complete shit show, because I do not need a rematch between these two, and there's a possibility we might get it. Maybe Jimmy Uso cost Jey the World Heavyweight Championship because he became the number one contender this past week on Raw. No fucking thanks. We do not need to continue this feud. But this was easily the weakest match of either night. The crowd didn't give a shit, did not feel special at all. Jey was made to look like a fucking moron when he was like, oh yeah, I'll forgive you, and then Jimmy suckered him in and got the better of him. Thankfully, did not win off of that, but it made Jey look like an idiot after this guy has cost him championship after championship after championship for the past 8 months or so. So they did that. Just, it didn't really feel special at all. It was just a match. And again, for a big match they've been building up since SummerSlam, and they both really wanted this match, and both guys are good, you would think they would have gone out there and had a better match. Jey is infinitely at this point, moreover, better in every aspect than Jimmy Uso, who I like and plays his role well, but it is impossible to give a shit about the guy. So, were you as disappointed by this as I was?
It was not the best match. I think one of the biggest problems is just like you said, I think Jey is just at a higher level than Jimmy. I feel like people just... no one gave a fuck about Jimmy Uso, which I don't blame them. Like, why would you? And I feel like he was kind of on top most of the match. He didn't really have heat, so no one really booed him. And Jey luckily won. Like I said, I think we both picked Jimmy on for it. And luckily he didn't win, so Jey won. The matches didn't really click for me either. It also doesn't help they both do the same, like, moves. So, like, it kind of felt repetitive. Like, had 1,000 super kicks. I just don't think it really helped that no one's invested in Jimmy at all. Mm-hmm. So, like, the crowd just didn't react to him. Like, even when he hit Jey, like, they did the yeet. They didn't even do, like, the yeet boo. They just did the yeet for Jey. Like, they didn't even give Jimmy the boo treatment. So, it just didn't gel. I mean, I don't know why they really thought it would. Jey, like, Jimmy just cost Jay title shots after title shots, and Jay's out there like, oh, I hope after WrestleMania we can team again. Like, why would you want to? Like, that makes no fucking sense. Like, he cost you the title three different times, and then you're just like, oh, well, hopefully once we get this figured out, we can team again. Like, why? I don't know. I think they did a very bad job. Like, they promoted it, yeah, but, like, on Ron SmackDown, they did a horrible job, like, actually building it up to actually, like, wanting to see Jay, like, Jimmy get his ass kicked, because I feel like Jay didn't care. Like, guy lost his badge. He's still bopping around, like everything's happy-go-lucky. So I think they just did a bad job building it up, and the match did not deliver at all.
I know they were waiting closer to Mania to make the match official, but it made, like you said, Jay look dumb by just not accepting or going after or not accepting the match earlier and not going after Jimmy earlier, considering his brother cost him, again, multiple championship opportunities. Just bad. The best thing about this was the outcome, because hopefully it means that we're not continuing this. I know they interacted a night too during the main event, but hopefully that was the extent of it. We don't get a rematch at Backlash. I hope they don't even end up on the same show. I could see maybe... So that's the question, too, I guess, with the draft. I don't know what happens with the Bloodline. Do all the remaining members of the Bloodline end up on the same show is the question. Do they get drafted together? Is Roman even in the draft because he's not around right now? I don't know. I wouldn't mind them staying on separate shows because there's no need to reunite the Usos anytime soon. Jimmy is just, his booking and in the ring, he's just mid. I mean, that's just what he is. Whereas with Jay, he's kind of on another level right now, popularity-wise specifically, so... No need to associate him with the rest of the Bloodline or Jimmy Uso anytime soon. We had Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi beating the trio of Damage Control, Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. Good match here, an eight-minute squash, essentially. Just a glorified squash, exactly what it needed to be. Jade's offense kept limited. We saw her in the ring again on Raw on Monday night. Again, kept very limited. It was a 10-second squash or whatever. And, again, there's really not much more to say about it, but I thought they had great chemistry together. I love the entrance of Jade, Bianca, Naomi going over decisively, got them a win. And maybe Bianca and Jade now set their sights in the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships. I wouldn't be too surprised. So your thoughts, Mr. Marceau, on the six-woman tag team matchup?
It was fine. It was what it was, I guess, needed to be. I feel like that's what we keep saying on night one, like it was what it needed to be, nothing special. I mean, I would have rather seen Bianca and Tiffany 101, honestly, than what we got with this. But, I mean, like, they got Jade on there, still extremely limited. She might be Goldberg of the women variety at this point. I mean, I don't know if she's going to get much better. But, I mean, she's a star. That's what they just kind of are presenting. So that's what we're going to get. But I think it was just a standard trios squash. The right team won, and we move on.
I think you could have just... I mean, I'm not saying they should have done this, obviously, but I think you, by the entrance alone, you could have had just Jade make an entrance, and it would have had the same effect, because it's really not about the in-ring work at this point. Hopefully she does improve, and her 6 months of the PC helped her out a lot, because she was signed back in September, remember. She's not really wrestled at all. She hasn't wrestled at all on TV since then. She hasn't wrestled in house shows, dark matches, television, whatever it might be. Maybe, you know, tryout matches at the PC, but that's really about it. But her aura is really in the entrance, and the fact that she just comes out looking like a star, this was no exception. And hopefully it's onward to bigger and better things from here for Jade Cargill and WWE. For the Intercontinental Championship, Sami Zayn challenging and beating Gunther to now become the next and new Intercontinental Champion, ending Gunther's run at 666 days on the dot. A great match here. I thought they told a great story. I thought Chad Gable might get involved, but as soon as they showed Sami Zayn getting the nod from Chad backstage and Kevin Owens, I know Kevin Owens got the nod from Sami Zayn the next night, but I thought here after they did that, man, that's a lock. He's winning the championship, and he did. Winning clean, Gunther getting kind of ahead of himself here, wanted to embarrass Sami in front of his family. It didn't work. Gunther is no longer the champion for the first time in almost 2 years. So an excellent match here. Wasn't overly fond of the outcome. I know we talked about it last week, but I just would have preferred Chad Gable in that spot. But now they have a great story to tell, Chad Gable going after Sami Zayn. He will be challenging Sami for the championship next week on Raw in Montreal. And he even said in a Raw Talk interview, hey, I'm not going to hold nothing back, and I'm going to make these people cry when I beat you. And it wasn't a heel promo, but maybe it was a tease into a heel promo from Chad Gable, if that's the direction they're going in. So your thoughts on the match, Mr. Marceau, and the fact that we have a new champion, and are you in favor of Sami Zayn as the new Intercontinental Champion?
So I wasn't really going into it, but I thought this match was a really good match with a really great storytelling. I think this is what Jimmy and Jay needed, just a better story in the ring. I mean, I think this clearly was like Gunther had him beat. Like you said, went like instead of just trying to beat him, he's trying to embarrass him from his family. He got caught up in the moment, and Sammy capitalized and beat him. It's not like he beat Gunther clean. Like, he did beat him clean, but not like decisively. Like, it was like Gunther had him dead to rights, and he just wanted to embarrass him. I thought this was a really good match. Sammy won, huge pop. I mean, it was probably the best match over. I thought it was the best match on Saturday night. So, good match, and glad Sammy won. Like I said, I'm not a big Gable guy, and I was happy with Sammy being the one to beat him.
Now, what does this mean for the trajectory of Gunther in WWE? Does he go right to the main event soon, and is one of Cody Rhodes' first challengers heading into Backlash, or do you hold off on that maybe until Bash in Berlin and Gunther kind of remains either in the IC title picture for now, maybe they build to a triple threat of the next pay-per-view with Gunther, Gable, and Sammy. Gunther doesn't have to get pinned in that matchup, or you just have Gunther feud with some other upper mid-card guys until he is ready for the main event, and they can insert him in there, and he can challenge for that championship and potentially win it.
Yeah, it just depends on where he ends in the draft, I guess. I mean, Rod's with Priest now, so it's not like he's going to face Priest. Like you said, maybe in the interim you do, like, him and Sammy again, or you do a triple threat, just get him finalized out of the IC title reign. But I think it really just depends on where he gets drafted.
And this is an opportunity, too, if they wanted to switch the championships, they could. Put Logan Paul on Raw, Sami Zayn on SmackDown. Gunther, same thing. He can go to SmackDown now. He's been on Raw. I mean, he got drafted to Raw last year, actually, so he was on SmackDown prior to that point, dominating the competition over there. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know if they need to do a rematch. I was glad that Gunther was beaten for the belt because they could have very easily kept him undefeated until he won the World Championship. And it wasn't really about his undefeated streak. It was just more about his championship run, and they could have very easily just had him lose it via relinquishing it or whatever, which would have been very stupid in my opinion. So I thought the way they did it was very well done. And just like that, we were at the main event, the Bloodline, Roman Reigns and The Rock beating Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins in a tag team matchup that went almost 45 minutes. And it was a great match. Early on, it was pretty standard stuff, kind of dragged on for a little while, brawling around ringside, and it was a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors. But we got more smoke and mirrors down the stretch, but they worked. A lot of false finishes, good storytelling, Rock looking really good, entrance was awesome, great fucking entrance. Rock held his own, and in the end, pinning Cody Rhodes to win this matchup. So, given what happened tonight too, I thought that was even better, because we said that last week, where if Rock pins Cody, he can be the first one up to challenge for the championship. Now, obviously not at Backlash, but at some point down the road, he can say, and he did on Raw, I beat you, I want a shot down the road for that championship that you now hold. But your thoughts on the night one main event, and how it kind of, I thought, perfectly set the stage for what we got in night two from the Bloodline Rules matchup.
I thought it was a good match. Like you said, a lot of smoke and mirrors to start, but I thought Rock looked good. I mean, everyone said that he was going to be blown up and look bad. I mean, I thought he looked right, like, for the part. So, made sense that him and Roman won just because of the stipulation of the night after. And, like you said, I feel like him beating Rock Cody could then set up Cody and Rock down the line, which we're probably going to get after what we heard on Raw, but thought it was a good way to end the show. Bad guys won. You knew what you're getting into on Saturday, Sunday night, so I thought the show ended pretty strong. Started strong, middle was there, and then it ended strong with Sammy and Gunther, and then this tag match.
Your thoughts on Rock's performance specifically?
I thought he looked good. I mean, I saw the reports that he was training with Gallus for a few months, and I thought he looked good. I thought he looked like a normal competitor in there. I didn't think he got blown up or looked like crap, so I was impressed.
Yeah, considering he hasn't wrestled in over a decade, I thought he looked good. And again, that kind of indicates to me, as it was already obvious anyway going into WrestleMania, that he is going to wrestle more matches, and he can't rehearse every single match that he has. But again, then again, if he's not going to wrestle every week or every month, and he's only going to have two or three matches, not even three, but maybe two matches a year, that's really all that's necessary. So, I thought he looked good out there, and we'll see what he brings in his next inevitable singles matchup, probably against Cody Rhodes. But with that, we go into night two. Again, starting the show strong here, World Heavyweight Championship shenanigans. Drew McIntyre beating Rollins in a mere 10 minutes, but I was fine with the fact they didn't go out there and have this all-out classic for a couple reasons. One, they were telling the story that Rollins was hurt coming off of night one, and McIntyre won clean, so that was perfect. Two, they've already had the great matches before. They've had great matches on Raw day one a few months ago and back at Crown Jewel 5-6 months ago. So we've already gotten the great matches from them. This was more of an elongated angle. I thought it was great. McIntyre winning decisively. CM Punk, who sat in on commentary, did not get involved, though he did cost Drew the championship by attacking him afterward, which allowed Damian Priest to cash in. Now, we said going into the show for with me personally, I was not in favor of a Money in the Bank cash in on the show. I was originally, but then I'm like, would he cash in on Drew? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Damian and Drew are both heels. How can they work that out? I thought the whole thing was perfectly executed because I was worried Rollins would retain or win or whatever, and then maybe Damian cashes in on him. Drew cannot go in there and lose. I mean, the guy's been on a great run as of late. There was no way he can go in there and lose, and he did. He went in there and won, and he did lose the championship. But the way they did it was perfect. I mean, he was aggressive out there, winning the belt, becoming the new champion, getting his moment in front of fans for the first time in 4 years. That was the real top takeaway here for me. They furthered the feud between him and CM Punk, setting that up for when Punk comes back, which could be on the sooner side. More on that in a moment. And then Priest cashes in successfully at WrestleMania, gets a big reaction, making a new star with him in the process. Again, I think this whole thing was perfectly executed. So your thoughts not only on McIntyre and Rollins as a match, but how they executed this whole thing and how it could be one of the best executed cash-ins in WWE history.
Yeah, I thought the match, it was what it needed to be. We didn't need an instant classic 20-minute mat-to-mat, like, barn burner. Like, we knew Rollins was coming off the tag match. He was selling the injury. Drew's been a maniac lately. So I thought the time, the way it was executed, Drew won, was great. The whole aftermath of Punk, like you said, I thought was done perfectly. Priest cashing in made sense. Well, after Punk kind of beat up on Drew and kind of weakened him for Priest. I mean, I like that Priest cashed in. I'm not the biggest Priest fan. I mean, I think he's built to what they thought he was going to be at this point. I feel like he hasn't really got there yet. Maybe one, now that he has the belt, maybe can kind of spruce him up a little bit. I feel like I'm glad he won. I'm glad he cashed in successfully because I feel like we've seen a lot of non-cash-ins, but I also think they thought when he won the briefcase to be a bigger deal than he is now, but maybe we'll see. Now he's out of the tag team division, maybe they can make him more of a main event player than just like a tag team side guy. So we'll see. I liked it. Like you said, I thought it was done well, and I like how this built up Drew and Punk for Punk's eventual return.
You're right. I mean, they did nail the cash-in, but it's not, you know, you can't forget about the months and months of abysmal build of Damian Priest. And him winning Money in the Bank was cool, but since then, he really hasn't done a whole lot. I mean, he was tag team champion since September, October, whatever it was. But he's been basically a mid-card guy, feuding with R-Truth and doing all this other sort of stuff. They main-evented Survivor Series and War Games, but as a main-event guy, that is one he has not been. Since he won the briefcase last summer, which is why all, you know, I thought signs pointed to him not cashing in successfully, but he did. Speaking of that, though, if you could look into your crystal ball here, do you think with Damian Priest that he is a guy that will, after he loses the championship, which could be a clash, they announced the new Clash of the Castle pay-per-view in Scotland, which is cool. He could drop the belt back to Drew there. Do you think he's a guy that will stay at that main event upper mid-card level? Or do you think he's going to be fall into that territory of a Kofi Kingston and people like that, who kind of drop back down the card, and that's where they stay?
If I was taking an educated guess, I'd say he's more like a Kofi Kingston. They're going to be like a main event player. Like I said, we'll see what happens once he wins the belt. They kind of spruce him up a little bit. Assuming once the Judgment Day break off or whatever, maybe they'll just see him in a different light. But like I said, I think also the 6 to 7 months of him just being a mid-card guy, that definitely didn't help. And I don't know. I don't see him as like a main event guy. That's don't see it right now.
I could see him being a main event guy, but I don't see him being a main event guy based off how he's been booked, I guess is the question. I guess is my point. I could see him being capable of being a main event guy, but it's more a matter of how they handle him after he loses the championship. Because it's easy to be close to a main event guy when you're holding world title gold, and we'll see if they even book him at that level. Or if he's just like a mid-card guy who just happens to be the world heavyweight champion, which was the case with Punk way back when. But speaking of home, again, like I said, Punk interfering, furthering the feud with Drew, costing him the championship here and the number one contendership on the next night's Raw. So Punk getting physical to a certain extent. Do you think they would have Punk pull off both of those things if he wasn't being cleared on the Sooner side? Maybe WrestleMania, I could say, but he was on Raw as well. I know it was the post-WrestleMania Raw. I'm not exactly sure what you do with Drew in the meantime if Punk isn't cleared. Do you think Punk's cleared a lot sooner than we think? Or do you think they were just saving Punk and Drew for down the road, and this was their way of spicing it up on the, you know, around WrestleMania season, and then he's going to go away for a while again?
I think he'd be back on the Sooner side. I think he'd be, like I said, I don't think they'd have him get involved if he wasn't. I just feel like you said, I know it's WrestleMania, but I don't know. I feel like he would hold off if he wasn't even close. I think he said in the Ariel Helwani interview as well that, like, this one went better than his last one, so I think he's expected to be back on the Sooner side.
Does this mean that Drew's re-signed, that they're really aggressively building to a Punk-Drew match, or do you think they could do the match and then Drew does indeed leave? Because as of now, as of earlier this week, the report is that he hasn't re-signed yet.
I think he'll re-sign.
Do you think he takes time off and re-signs, or do you think he just re-signs and stays in general?
I feel like he could take some time off and then resign. He's been around a lot. I feel like getting some time off and then come back would be ideal.
Yeah, I guess the question is when his contract does actually expire, because it would be pretty shitty if his contract expired before late May, early June, and then he's not on Clash of the Castle. I mean, he's got to agree to work that show at the very least, because that's in his home country, and it's going to be an amazing moment, I'm sure, for him, regardless of what happens. Hopefully he does win back the World Heavyweight Championship on that show, which would mean Damian only gets a 2-month run, but not everyone needs a 6-month run as world champion. Maybe Damian, again, it's all a matter of how they book Damian from that point forward. So I'd be totally fine with that. We had the Philadelphia Street Fight, which they added to the Mania card last week after we spoke. Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits knocking off the Final Testament's Karrion Kross and AOP. Fine little match, really nothing more to this than what we got. Nothing more that needed to be added to it, I guess I should say. It was what it needed to be, is what I meant to say. It was fun for what it was. Bubba Ray Dudley is the special guest referee. It was a surprise. They were in Philly, so nice little ECW touch there. And, that's really about it. The Pride winning. They've been getting their asses kicked as of late quite a bit by the Final Testament, so I thought that what they did here made a lot of sense, and it was good for what it was. A nice buffer coming off that opening segment. The crowd was more into this than most matches of Night 1, which was nice to see. So, your thoughts, Mr. Marceau, on the Philadelphia Street Fight?
Getting the popcorn was good. Took about 2 minutes and 30 seconds for the nice pop. I refilled my soda. Went to the bathroom, and I came back. I saw the table spot that it broke, and then the splash, 1, 2, 3, great match.
So I guess it served its purpose as a popcorn break, bathroom break match for you.
It was the perfect match for that. And honestly, I thought it was a great match on the card. It gave me the perfect amount of time to do things to get away from the TV for like 5-10 minutes.
Well said. AJ Styles and LA Knight, I thought, had actually a very good match. The feud's been kind of subpar overall, but I thought they went out there and had a really, really good match. Knight winning clean, that surprised me. I'm glad he did. And I thought he would win for a while, but going into WrestleMania, it felt like he got physical with AJ. He got what he wanted. And then AJ would win the match. But no, AJ ended up losing, doing the honors for LA Knight, which I think was the right call. AJ hasn't won at Mania in a while, but this was Knight's first Mania. He's lost a lot on pay-per-view in recent months, losing to the Bloodline twice, Roman Reigns twice, and then losing in Elimination Chamber. So this was a nice win for him, and hopefully puts him back in the right trajectory towards maybe the United States Championship, which we'll get to in a moment. But your thoughts on this matchup and how it kind of, to me anyway, exceeded expectations?
Yeah, I thought this was a good match. I like how they started with a jump start. It's the only match it did, so it felt a little bit different. It's been like more of like not a blood feud, but they've obviously been at each other's throats for a little bit now. So I thought it made sense. I thought it was a good match. Shocked LA Knight won. I think I picked AJ. I don't know about you. I picked AJ.
No, I did too.
I just felt like the classic heel wins at Mania, and then like LA Knight gets his win back at Backlash. But nice LA Knight won, and thought it was a solid match. I honestly thought after the popcorn bathroom drink break, I thought this was a perfect match to put right on after that.
What were your thoughts on AJ's new music if you heard it?
I liked it.
Oh, you liked it. Okay, I wasn't really a fan.
I think it's something that's going to grow on me a little bit. I thought it was decent. I mean, I think it said you don't want none. No, you don't want none.
I mean, you can't.
I thought it was gonna be Get Ready Accelerate, but didn't get that.
Stop. I mean, we're not gonna get that song again. I think AJ even said in an interview last week with Chris Van Vliet, actually. He even said, I can't listen to that music again. I've heard it for so fucking long. I'm sick of that song. But I don't know if anyone asked him. I didn't get a chance to talk to him myself. I don't know if anyone asked him about the Evil Ways song that he was using towards the end of his TNA run, which I thought would have been the perfect fit for this new character. We didn't get it. That fucking pissed me off because I thought that song would have been perfect for AJ, but whatever. I thought the music was fine. We'll see. It's a downgrade from the other song, but he had to change it up because that's not really who he is anymore, that previous song. So whatever. For the WWE Women's... Or no, actually, before we get to that matchup, we had Logan Paul retain the United States Championship against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. Again, another really good match. I thought this was well-paced. They got a lot of time. Fun moments. The only thing I didn't really care for was that guy Ishow Speed in the fucking Prime costume. Someone difference in the Prime costume a lot. I mean, it was KSI a lot of the time, and now it was this dude. I had no fucking clue who this guy is. It seems like they just like to bring in, Logan Paul asks to bring in friends of his and shit to play these roles, but if no one knows who the fuck they are, then what's the point? So I thought that was dumb. If it was like his brother, that makes sense, because people know his brother. But it was someone that we don't even know who it is, so we got literally no reaction. Everyone was asking, who the fuck is that? So that was disappointing. But the actual match itself, I thought, was a lot of fun, and had the right finish as well, with Logan Paul retaining the championship by pinning Kevin Owens, hopefully putting us back on the trajectory of what I just said, of him and LA Knight at some point for that belt, unless they end up on separate shows, which would be fucking stupid. So your thoughts on the matchup, Mr. Marceau, and the outcome?
I thought it was really good. Like you said, I thought it was paced well. Paul, Owens, and Orton, I thought, worked all well together. I fucking pop for Ishow Speed. I know who that is, so
okay.
I went nuts. He's like a stream. He's like a kind of like a troll streamer. Yeah, that's kind of what he is. So I know. Right when I thought it was KSI. That's who I thought it was gonna be. And then when he took it off, I knew exactly what it was. I was fucking dying laughing. Molly had no idea who it was. Dennis like legit hates this guy. So I sent it to Dennis. He was fucking dying. But that's who he is. He's like another streamer, kind of like troll. So I went nuts on Ishow Speed. I can understand if people don't know who he is. They'd be like, what? But yeah. So that, and then I thought right person won, and we'll see if we get a little LA Knight and Logan Paul somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would do it at Backlash, but it's got to be on the sooner side. People were saying to me, oh, what about SummerSlam? One, I don't know if they're going to end up on the same show. If they're going to end up on different shows, you got to do it at Backlash, but I wouldn't do it like, I mean, it's Friday and SmackDown, maybe. It's the post-WrestleMania SmackDown, but it won't be in front of the same crowd that we got on Monday night because they're in Detroit tonight, actually. I forgot we're speaking on Friday, not on Thursday. But, yeah, no, I guess we'll see what happens. I wouldn't wait until SummerSlam, though. That's another 4 months away. I don't know what you do with both guys until then. Specifically Knight. I don't need to see this feud with AJ continue. I mean, I guess it could. But I really want to see him move on and chase some championship gold again and win this time after losing to Roman Reigns twice. WWE Women's Championship, Bayley Neo Sky. Bayley kind of tapping into her. I thought she had some, like, Egyptian background or something. I think she just likes it. I don't know. Or, no, there was some sort of tie to her, like, San Jose
roots. Sometime in San Francisco.
San Jose. All right, yeah, somebody
like
made
some,
that
like,
comment.
Pyramid. I don't know. Corey Graves talked about it. It's, like, some kind of pyramid thing that's in where she's from. I don't know exactly where it was. That's what the tie-in was.
Okay, that makes more sense. That's what happens when you listen to commentary. We didn't because I couldn't hear it, but that makes a lot more sense. I thought the entrances were cool, and honestly, I thought this was a really good match when I saw Mike, Alexis's dad, a couple days later. He actually said of all the matches on these shows, this was his favorite, which shocked me because he usually does not give a shit about women's wrestling at all. But he said this was really good, and I got to agree. I thought they beat the shit out of each other. It was really hard-hitting. Crisp moves, and I don't know, it was a great showing for Io because this was her first singles match at Mania. Bayley looked great. They worked really, really well together, and it had the right outcome of Bayley getting her moment, becoming the new champion, so I was happy for her, and the whole thing was just, I don't know, I thought this was just a lot of fun. It would have been very easy for this match to under-deliver with it being right before the main event and the crowd being tired or whatever, but no, they were into it. They beat the fuck out of each other, and they had a really good match, and the outcome was what it needed to be. So your thoughts on Bayley and Sky for the Women's Championship?
I thought it was, besides Sammy and Gunther, the best match of both nights. I thought they worked really well together. I felt like it helped showcase more of what Io can do. I feel like in her title reign, she's had really good matches, but I don't know. I feel like it kind of just utilized like what she can do, and Bayley looked great as well. I don't know. They just worked really well together. So the crowd was into it. I felt like maybe the promotion there was undersell, over deliver, because they didn't really get a lot of the mainstream going into either night. And I thought, like you said, I thought they had the second, they had the best match of the second night overall, like in ring wise. And I'm glad Bayley won. And I, like I said, I feel like it kind of reiterated how good Io is as well. So thought it was a really good match. Great to see Bayley get her moment. And it was just a great, great match.
Yeah, it was. They've really been killing it with these women's title matches at Mania for the last couple of years now. Going back to 37, they've had a consistent string of great matches, and this was no exception. Really happy with this all around. And then again, just like that, we get to the main event, Cody Rhodes beating Roman Reigns, being the one to beat the one of the one or whatever the fuck it was, to become the new undisputed WWE Universal Champion. This was your Avengers Endgame, Star Wars type stuff with all the interference as we expected. No Stone Cold Steve Austin. I saw this morning from the Wrestling Observer that it was supposed to be Stone Cold. Take that with a grain of salt, though. Meltzer's been wrong about quite a bit lately. But I would believe that, though, because I mean, I think that was the leading belief, leading theory amongst a lot of people going into the show, coming out of it, that spot that Taker had was supposed to be for Stone Cold. And that would have been just... I mean, this was a great main event, and I think this was, to me, the best WrestleMania main event of all time. That may have put it on another level, to have one more Rock, Stone Cold interaction, the pop alone. The Taker stuff was cool, and we even said going into it, why would Taker even be out there? That's ridiculous. It was ridiculous, but for the nostalgia aspect of it, I thought it delivered, and he wasn't out there doing a whole lot. He was just already in the ring, which I thought was well done. So anyway, the match itself was great, not to take away from Cody's moment, because it was amazing. Beautifully executed. The entrances were great. The Roman entrance, I've watched back probably 10 times since Sunday. That was fantastic. The video package gave me Daniel Bryan monster vibes. Phenomenal stuff. And the match itself, I thought was great and perfectly executed. Overbooked the fuck, but it was exactly what it needed to be. I've said that a lot with this show, but I agree with... I mean, that's been the case with a lot of these matches, but that's just how I feel, because they gave people what they wanted, and I thought they did the right thing here by having Cody Rhodes win. And oh yeah, that text queued up with Roman Reigns retaining. Thankfully, you did not need it. You could trash that note, and Cody Rhodes is the new undisputed WWE Universal Champion. So talk to me about it, Mr. Marceau. Bloodline rules. Your thoughts in the matchup. Were you as high on it as I was?
No, it was great. Like you said, I think the only thing I would have changed was Stone Cold instead of Undertaker. I mean, it was still great to begin. It was still great, but it would have been, I think the place would have went even nuts, way more nuts if it was Stone Cold. Like I said, I like Taker, but one more Stone Cold and The Rock, ugh, I would have went fucking crazy. So I thought it was, like I said, booked well, overbooked the shit, but it was just what it needed to be. Jay taking out Jimmy, Cena taking out Solo, Taker taking out The Rock, and then Cody just cleaning up Roman. He said that both entrances are great. I fucking popped humongous for Brandy, went nuts. and I thought Roman's, like I said, with the orchestra was great. And Cody beats him 1, 2, 3, and everyone comes out and celebrates, and we end on a happy note. So I thought it was exactly what it needed to be. We got all the cameos, Bloodline just getting knocked out, and Cody finally finishing the story. So I thought it was great.
It was perfect. What do you think this means now for the Bloodline? Where does Roman Reigns go from here, and when do you think we get Rock and Rhodes for the championship?
I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Well, I guess we'll see. I feel like we're going to get Roman and Cody 2 or 3 before we get Rock and Cody 1, so we'll see. I think Roman will probably be off for a while, but I don't know. I can see we get Cody, Roman 3 at SummerSlam, and then Rock and Cody next year WrestleMania, maybe. I feel like we should get Rock and I think we should get Roman Cody again before we get Rock and Cody. So I'll say Rock and or Cody and Roman in 3 at SummerSlam, and then we'll get Rock and Cody at WrestleMania 41.
It's interesting you say that. I'm not a fan of that idea, just because I don't think we need Cody and Roman again, because I don't want Roman. I don't think needs to lose for a second time, because he shouldn't be beating Cody either. I would rather just Cody move on to different people. I also don't think you can top the previous two matches. The first match was excellent with a marred finish, but now it makes more sense in retrospect. That's the other question, too. Do you think what we saw on night two for Mania 40 makes up for what we got last year? And I hate to say it, because I'm the last person to say that they did the right thing last year, but it may have made it more worth it. Had they done it last year, I don't know if it would have meant as much as it did on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would have been great both nights. I mean, I guess, like, he finally overcame everything. So, I guess, like, the whole end game, it made sense. But I feel like it would have been huge at 39 as well. But I think, like I said, finally, like, getting over the bloodline, I think it was big. Like I said, do we need Cody Roman 3? No, but I guess, what would you do with Roman next time?
Yeah.
He should get a rematch, too. He held the belt for fucking 4 years.
He should get a rematch?
Why wouldn't he? He held the belt for 4 years.
I know, but I don't know if I want Roman losing again before he faces... Here's the other thing, too. We got to get Cody and Rock at some point.
He has to lose.
Well, he has to lose, but the other part of it is that Rock already said, listen, when I come back, I want the next championship shot. So why would Roman get a shot before Rock?
Okay, so what are you going to do with Roman then?
I would keep him off TV. I wouldn't have him... I would just have him come back around SummerSlam. I mean, I don't know if we're even getting Rock and Rhodes at SummerSlam because they're filming the movie right now. But I would have Roman come back and, again, help The Rock or take exception with the fact that he was... I mean, have Rock lose. Either Roman distracts him or Roman comes out afterward and he comes out and is like, hey, what the fuck? Like, why are you going after the championship that should have been mine type thing? And then that way you start planting the seeds for a big match at Mania. I just don't know if you should save Roman and Rock for Mania 42. That just seems like it's too far away.
Yeah, it just depends on when he's done with movies, I guess.
I just think you can get two big main events next year at Mania. One with Rock and Roman, and then one with Cody, whoever he defends the title against. Or he loses it and gets it back, and Cody could be doing something else. I don't know. But that's what I would probably do. It's all a matter of when he's done with the movies, like you said. One last thing on this front. Do you think it was the best, to your knowledge, memory, the best WrestleMania main event of all time, or no? It's 40 years
great
worth.
Question.
I know.
I mean, I think it was one of the best. I'm trying to think of other things. I feel like the Daniel Bryan one was great.
Yeah, you were there
the
for that one,
especially.
Yeah.
That one was big. I mean, Seth catching it was huge.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other years. I mean, those three stick out in the top of my head. I mean, trying to think, like, 19, like, Brock won there. Can't even remember. Can't even bring up 20 at this point. I'm trying to think of other ones. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be up there. I mean, even with Roman winning at 39, I mean, I think that was still, like I said, besides the ending, like, the actual finish, I feel like that was an amazing match that just people don't even talk about because they're so mad that Solo fucking hit him with the spike, 1-2-3. But even that was amazing. So I would say it's probably top three, if not top one. I would have to go over it a little bit more. Like, so there was a ton of fucking hoopla, but I feel like that's what it needed. So it's definitely up there. For me, it's like top three.
All right. I would certainly say so. I would probably put it number one. Taker and Shawn Michaels having one of the best main events of all time at 26. Not eclipsing their original encounter at WrestleMania 25, but I would still put that one up there as well. So that was Mania in a nutshell. I thought it was a very good show. I thought it was a very fun show. Night 2, definitely better than Night 1. And it sets the stage for what they're calling a new era going forward in WWE. We saw that in the next night's Raw. Not exactly an electric show, but it was a lot of fun. I thought the best post-WrestleMania Raw in quite a while, which isn't saying much, but it was still a fun show. And we'll see how they can kind of carry the momentum into Backlash in France and then on to Saudi Arabia, King and Queen of the Ring. They have that. They have the Glasgow show, Clash of the Castle in June, Money in the Bank in Toronto. Lot to look forward to right now. One last thing to discuss here. Do you got a couple minutes to talk about the Bucks thing from Dynamite, or would you rather save it for next week?
I have time.
Let's get into it here, because I know you want to talk about it. We were discussing it over text the other day. Again, not a lot of AEW talk this week. There really isn't a lot to talk about. I watched Dynamite last week, this week, two fine shows. But the only thing people will be discussing for the next little while with AEW is the Bucks-Tony Khan fiasco with CM Punk. Now, we talked about the CM Punk-Ariel Helwani interview last week that he did last Monday before WrestleMania. Now, their response was, first by having Edge go on Dynamite last week and do the whole rah-rah speech, which was stupid, whatever. And then they go out and air the all-in footage from backstage, the actual footage of Jack Perry and CM Punk getting into it. The problem is, it doesn't show us anything we didn't already know. Like, it was interesting to watch, sure, but it doesn't embarrass CM Punk any more than he was already embarrassed, is my point. And I'm not even saying, when I say Punk was right, I think people, I don't know if I said Punk was right in my tweet, but if I did, what I meant was, and people are misconstruing it as, oh, I mean, he he attacked first and all this other sort of shit. Yeah, sure, he did. I'm not saying he shouldn't have. I mean, that was unprofessional. They should have, I mean, I don't know if they should have fired him for that, obviously. There were other issues leading up to it, which led to his departure, and he said he quit anyway. That might have been a case of I quit because you're going to fire me. Whatever. I'm not saying Punk was right in that he should have attacked Jack Perry. I'm saying he was right and that everything that he said on the Ariel Helwani podcast was exactly what happened. I mean, there were reports dating back to when it happened last year that, oh, he threatened Tony Khan. Maybe he did because there was no audio in the video that we saw on Wednesday. We don't have every little detail of what happened, but it sure looked to me like he just got pissed at Tony Khan and said, hey, exactly what he said in the interview. Hey, you're a fucking clown. I quit. This is ridiculous. And I agree because he didn't do shit. He just sat there and did nothing. So, again, what was accomplished from showing this footage on Wednesday night? Because my answer would be nothing.
Nothing positive, I would say. It makes Tony Khan look like the clown, gutless, terrible boss that CM Punk told him he was. I don't think it made Punk look bad. It literally was exactly what he said. Like, he literally pushed him, put him in a chokehold, it got broken up. Like you said, I'm assuming it would be like, oh no, he could have threatened Tony. I'm pretty sure it was just like, he said, like, dude, this place is a fucking joke, I quit. And then they fucking had the match and moved on. I mean, I just feel like it didn't serve. I don't understand why you would show that, because it didn't serve any purpose. Positive purpose. If anything, I feel like people are, like, more on Punk's side, because there's, like, people are saying, oh, no, like, he sucker punched him and all this other stuff. It's like, he literally, what happened was literally what he said was going to, what happened. So it's, yeah, I don't know, I just feel like it made them look dumb, and there was no point. Like, Tony Khan said it was the Bill Dynasty. How is that the Bill Dynasty? It had nothing to do with
that. No, that's a stretch. That's such a stretch. They aired the footage trying to further the feud between the Bucks and FTR by having the Bucks say, no, it was a joke. They were like, oh, because we had the EVP hats on during this incident, and that's why we lost. They had nothing to do with that. I mean, obviously, they had issues with Punk, but that incident, they had nothing to do with. And Jack Perry isn't even on the show, so it's not like he gets heat for it, or heat from this. Maybe in New Japan, if he comes back. I mean, he's in New Japan for a reason. Tony Khan doesn't want him on the show. He's probably still pissed at him for the fact that he had to fire Punk because of this dumbass incident. Is it a fireable offense? That alone? No. But, I mean, there's obviously other shit that happened going into it. I'm not really... That doesn't really bother me. It's just more the fact that they showed it. Because, again, like you said, it makes them look desperate, dude. They did 850,000 viewers last night or on Wednesday.
I think it was less than that. I think it was like 818, maybe.
Man, like, when... They did something similar for that when Mercedes showed up, I think. I don't have the list of ratings in front of me. They have not done very high ratings by Dynamite standards in quite a while. That didn't pop a higher rating. But that just means, dude, they're relying on the same guy they've always had for a draw, for a nice little ratings pop, and that's CM Punk, and he doesn't even work there anymore. It just makes them look desperate by having them show footage that's not relevant, and it was just an excuse to embarrass the guy. But guess what? It doesn't. I mean, anyone that didn't like Punk before is still not going to like Punk. No one really is going to change their mind on this. And if you believe Punk, you're still going to believe him. If you don't believe Punk, you're still not going to believe him. But the point is, it just makes them look worse because this is like WCW level shit. I'm not saying the whole company is WCW 2.0, but this sort of shit is like Vince Russo stuff. And another thing too, what I think was really, really bad about it was the fact they had FDR come out afterward and talk about, why are we showing this stuff? Why aren't we moving on? Saying all what we're all thinking, expecting us to go, and maybe a lot of people fell for it because they're stupid, and we're like, yeah, FDR, yeah, tell them. Like, yeah, they shouldn't be showing it. Like, no, they scripted them to say that. They're aware enough to know that they shouldn't be showing it, but they're fucking doing this anyway, trying to play into the whole shoot aspect of it. Like, what a fucking joke.
Yeah, I thought the whole FTR promo was so stupid. Like you said, it was clearly scripted because they literally said, like, what they wanted them to say. It was dumb. I don't know. I feel like every time they do something good, they do take, like, six steps backwards, and this is what this was. There's no positive, and it made the company look fucking dumb.
It was really bad. Do you think this is a... I guess we just kind of answered this question, but how much of a negative turning point can this be for the company where people are like, dude, I'm not watching this shit again, and especially since the show on Wednesday was mid as fuck. I mean, I don't really remember much of what happened. I liked Copeland and Penta in the opener. The rest of the show really wasn't much of worth writing home about, but, you know, the only thing people are going to be talking about coming out of that show, and probably for the next few weeks, is that Punk thing. I'm not talking about Dynasty. I completely forgot about that show. Will Ospreay taking the shot at Triple H was stupid, but what Triple H said was dumb too, so that kind of cancels out. The Punk thing, and that's not comparable to this, because Punk was just answering a question on an interview, giving his side of it. Again, if you really want to show the footage, have Tony Khan put it up on Twitter. He's certainly not shy about saying dumb shit on Twitter. But no, they had to save it for Dynamite because they really wanted to pop a rating. It's not a good look. And even if that's not the case, that's what it looks like. Just a really bad look. Makes Tony Khan look like a baby. And above all else, him saying that's what he feared his life for just tells me he's the most sheltered man in the world. I mean, I'm not saying I've been in a lot of real-life fights and stuff like that, but I mean, Punk just simply yelling at him, and again, people are like, oh, he did lunge at him. Go back and watch the footage. It certainly didn't look like to me like Punk did lunge at Tony Khan. And here's another question, too, that people haven't really asked in the last 8 months since this happened. What would have been the point of Tony Khan or CM Punk lunging at Tony Khan anyway? That doesn't even make sense. Tony Khan didn't do anything. I mean, that's the problem. He didn't do anything.
I don't think he was lunging at him. I think it was more like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
like he was like pointing at him like this, like I told you this was going to happen. Like it wasn't like he like threatened to kick his ass. Like, I don't know.
But like, that doesn't even make, like, I know exactly. That's exactly what happened. Because I feel like if he lunged at Tony Khan or said that I'm going to kick your ass, why would he have done that? His beef in that moment was with Jack Perry. He was simply mad at Tony Khan because he didn't do shit, and he should be mad at him because he's an idiot. In this respect, he didn't do anything. He just let it happen. Why would he go from swinging at Jack Perry to swinging at the boss when the boss was not a physical threat in the slightest, and he wasn't going to do shit about it? He's super passive. All he does is just fucking sit there and just let people do what they want. Well, it doesn't even make sense why he would even throw a hand at, why he would start throwing hands at Tony Khan. I mean, use your fucking head. Why would he do that? And the footage clearly shows, to me anyway, if you look at his body language, he was pissed at him. I'm not even saying he should have done that. But he clearly did not go after Tony Khan. He stood up to him and was like, listen, I quit because you're a clown. But that was really the extent of it, in my opinion. I don't know. This whole thing is just a really bad look for them, and it's going to be a while for them to get over it. I don't really think this is a small deal either, because I think week by week, slowly and surely, they're losing a lot of goodwill at the fans, and the product is still very good. I mean, AEW is not in the toilet by any means, but it's shit like this that really makes it difficult to take this company, and specifically Tony Khan, seriously, and I know you would agree with that as well.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll talk more about it next week. If they follow up on it on Dynamite, we'll see. They do have Dynasty next week, so we'll talk more about that on next week's show, along with all the other fallout from WrestleMania weekend going forward in WWE. New episodes every single week, usually on Thursdays. This was a bit of a change-up. It's been a very busy past week, but we'll be back on Thursdays, I assume, next week. WrestleRant.com, WrestleRantRadio.com, iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Pandora, Amazon Music, all that other sort of stuff. Find the show, rate the show, review the show, subscribe to the show. Never miss a new episode every single week. Have a great one, Mr. Marceau. Hope you feel a little bit better going forward, and I'll catch you next Thursday, brother.
See you later, man.
Adios.
Join Graham, GSM Matthews, and RJ Marceau every Thursday as they run down their weekly wrestling rants, offer expert analysis, host exclusive interviews, and more. Subscribe today on all your favorite podcast platforms and never miss an episode of Wrestle Rant Radio.